Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Chof Zayin. And remember what has happened. We started off with the discussion of the Isser Hanoah of Chametz that led us into an examination of the entire relationship between Isser Achila and Isser Hanoah, every single place in the Torah, and more fundamentally, and to an understanding of the meaning of even the concept of Lo Ye'achel versus Lo Yochal. That led us into the other dinim that were mentioned in the Mishnah, which had to do with whether there would be a heter to utilize b'shas bior, would there be a heter to use the heat in your tanur, and that led us into what appeared to be a digression. I mean, obviously the perek in the end is coming to discuss the way in which Yisrei Hanah affect us and affect the different levels of usage. And we started talking about what the din would be in the event that Yisrei Hanah was utilized in a way that the Hanah became permanently embedded. So we spoke about what would be the din if you went ahead and you utilized Yisrei Hanah. We talked about the case of Orla, Chometz. You cooked up a tanur utilizing the Yisrei Hanah, and now there's no way to undo that. So you basically formed that tanur. We had two brises, one of which said that a brand new tanur will have to be smashed, and an older tanur, where it wasn't permanently embedded in the actual structure of the molecules of the tanur, you could just let the heat dissipate, and then there wouldn't be any use of the hana'a. And then we found another brita that says even if it's a new tanur, it's also not a problem, and you can continue to use that. And we came to understand that the machlokas between those two Rises was the question of Zeh Gorim. And that is, once you understand that there's a fundamental difference between a case of a loaf of bread that's cooked in the tanur, we're over there. Indeed, the loaf of bread itself is a direct result of the energy of the Yisrei Hanah. The tanur, albeit the tanur, is the direct result of that energy. But in order for you to be able to get a Hanah out of that tanur in the future, the only way you get Hana out of it is by heating it up with a new source of energy. But that means that the Hana is a derivation of the new Eitzim, which are kosher, obviously, if you want to be able to use the bread this time, and the use of the Tanur. That was called Zeh V'Zeh Gorim. So the difference between the first Braita that says you have to bust the Tanur is apparently that the Tana of the first Braita, which on a first reading appeared to be Rebbe, because, I mean, it didn't say Rebbe Omer, but in the second part of that Braita, we did find the Machlokas Rebbe and the Chachamim about whether the bread is going to be busser or not. So probably we thought it was Rebbe, but we really couldn't prove it. And in the end, we found a place where we finally did find a raya that somebody else, Zeh V'Zeh Gorim, would be Osir, and that was Rebbe Eliezer. We were looking for where that place was. And the other braita was not going according to Rebbe Eliezer, it was going according to Chachomim, and therefore there would be no problem in needing to smash up the tanur, because the only hana of the tanur would be a tanur of Zeh V'Zeh Gorim, and that would be okay. So the place that we found Rebbe Eliezer was sort of a strange place, because it wasn't clear in Rebbe Eliezer's language that that's what he held. Rebbe Eliezer talked about a case where you had chometz, or rather, I should say sa'or, technically speaking, that is sourdough, and you had two little pieces of sourdough, which together were sufficient to turn a dough into chometz. And one of that those pieces was truma, and one of those was chulin. And now the question was, is the resultant chimutz, the leavening that comes from this leavening agent, would that be considered to be osir, or would we say it's mutter because it's Zeh V'Zeh Gorim? So, according to the Rabbanan, it was mutter, no matter what. According to Rebbe Eliezer, it sounded like Rebbe Eliezer was giving some kind of interesting idea, where the meaning of what he said was, at least on the surface, was that whatever falls in last, that's going to be koveid halacha. It was Abaye who said that that's only where we had removed the other piece. So then the thing which is left giving the full chemical impact is, that is to say, when I say full, what I mean is the measurable chemical impact of the leavening is the last piece. That's what he seemed to be saying. But Abaye said, no, that's not what he means. He means to say that if both of those pieces were in there together, then it would be Zevah Zegerim would be Osir. The only time he's Matar is you do not have both pieces together. Okay, so if Abaya is right, then we in fact have finally identified the Tana we're looking for. It is indeed Rabbi Eliezer who holds Zev Zegorim is Osir. So everything now will fit the two prices. We're not quite sure what Rebbe holds because we don't know whether he said the Reish or he only said the Sefer. That's where we were at. Now today, and of course, after last night's Chanukah Shir, everybody's just letting this flow so that you can get the full das and be mamish like Rebbe Meir, and your head is just lighting up with this brand new light. Oh my gosh, it's amazing stuff. Zev is a gore, where would it apply? Is this the Lechatrila, Bidiyevet, the difference between Pas, Tanur, Waikada? Amazing. Anyway, so assuming that we have identified the Rebbe Eliezer, we're very happy. There's only one little problem. The problem is we have to trust Abaya's analysis of Rebbe Eliezer, that it's talking about only that he removed it, but if both of them would have been in at the same time, for sure it would have been Osir. I mean, you know, can you really prove that to the point that you're ready to say, you're going to commit yourself that Rebbe Eliezer has to say what Rebbe Abaya said? I mean, maybe it's not true. So now we start on the fourth line, and that's where we were up to. Ask the Gemara, what makes you think that we should rely on Abaya? We might, at the time of the Rebbe Eliezer Kabbai, who says that that's where Rebbe Eliezer holds? Maybe Rebbe Eliezer would actually mean what he said. I mean, if he means what he said, he's saying something entirely different. Maybe what he's saying is that since halacha does not consider the chemical impact of something that's immeasurable on the macro level, so because of that, whatever I can see and attribute a cause to is the halachic basis of that cause. So if I don't see the last thing that I see having any impact, all I see is everything was fine until this piece of truma fell in. Now everything all of a sudden becomes leavened. Okay, so then I'm going to blame the truma. If everything that I see is chulin, then I blame the chulin. So basically, all that he's saying is the dilma time that Rabbi Eliezer b'shem da'achar acharon aniba. What's the difference whether they were there at the same time or not? Lo shna kadam v'silek et ha'iser. Lo shna lo kadam v'silek et ha'iser. And maybe, in fact, if they both fell in simultaneously, and I would have no way of identifying whether the chemical impact was from A or B, and I would have to conclude that it's A plus B, so then that is called Zev HaZegorim. And maybe Rebbe Eliezer, in fact, is Matir Zev HaZegorim. So, I mean, I'm feeling a little uneasy about the identification of the Braita with a Rebbe Eliezer who might not even believe it. Okay, then there's got to be a different Rebbe Eliezer that we meant when we said there's definitely a Rebbe Eliezer somewhere that says Zev HaZegorim is Osir. Where? I'll tell you where. It's the Rebbe Eliezer in the Shita about Atzei Asherah. Now remember that if you have an Asherah tree, that wood is Osir. It's considered to be Avodah Zarah. We talked about you're not even allowed to use it to cure yourself and so on. So now, it says in the Mishnah over there in Avodah Zarah that if you took branches off an Asherah, you're referring to a Jew, not to a Goy, because if a Goy takes branches off an Asherah tree, he obviously no longer considers it to be very holy, holy, because why is he cutting off branches to burn in this fireplace? You don't normally burn up God for the fireplace, do you? So that in itself would have been a bittul of the Asherah. Okay, but in this case, we're talking about a Jew cuts it off. So now all of those branches are usher bahana'a. Now, suppose you go ahead and you take the branches and heat up your oven, okay? So now, if you were mesik means not to heat it up, but you actually fired it from its state of clay. So then, okay, if it's a brand new oven, so then you have to break it up. Aha! That's exactly what we've been talking about over here, right? You have to break it up because now it's permanently embedded in the structure of the oven, and therefore the oven is an actual chefetz of Yisrei Hana permanently. If it's an old oven, then you can let the heat dissipate, and it would be fine. I suppose you baked in it and you didn't wait till it cooled off, so then the bread would be Asur Bahana'a, which follows if the idea is that once something is embedded, it becomes Asur. And as a matter of fact, it's so Asur that if, let's say, a loaf of bread, I have no way of identifying the particular loaf, this particular loaf of bread falls into a bunch of other loaves, and those loaves were all heated with kosher wood, and now I can't identify what it is, and then one falls in from there into others. Not everybody agrees with this part, that this is the correct Irsa, but we'll read it because it's in our Gemara, but Tosfos objects. Acherot be'acherot, kulam asurim ba'ana'a. It's all osur ba'ana'a. Rabbi Eliezer says, well, yes, but I mean, when you say something is osur ba'ana'a, it just means you cannot be nene from it. So all you need to do is take that hana. Well, what's the value of that hana? Let's say $3 worth of wood. Take $3, throw it into the Yam HaMelech, and now you don't have any hana because you threw the hana out, right? So you could do that. Yolech hana al Yam HaMelech. It's not that you wouldn't be able to eat this entire mixture. I mean, yes, if you knew what it was, obviously you can't exchange that hana for another hana. But if the only problem is that if you're going to eat this mixture, you may end up being nene. So don't be nene. Pay whatever it was that you're making. Amrullah, what do you mean pay? Are you claiming that you could be podeh Avodah Zorah, you can redeem it? Of course, that's not what he meant at all. What he meant was is that you're not getting hana if it's costing you the same money to throw it out for a pack of cigarettes. I mean, that's not hana, that's just murder, right? So you can use it. No, no. So you throw it into the Yam HaMelech. Okay. But anyway, bottom line is, Rabbi Eliezer says, you have to destroy that oven. There we go. You couldn't have a better example of the case in the Mishnah. Exactly what we're talking about the chametz that you use for the oven, and then we took that to the braita, and what do you do if it's a new oven? And then we said, if it's orla, you break it up. Exactly what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. Says the Gemara, yes, for simplistic people like you, it may be exactly what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, but it's not what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. I mean, maybe it is, but I don't see that you can prove it. Don't you understand that when you're talking about an asherah, you're talking about a very special case? Remember, this entire thing is talking about the chumrah of Avodah Zorah. With many, many chumras of Avodah Zorah, it's never bata. We said dafu bacher, zacher is bacher. That's all unique to Asherah, right? So how do you know that Rebbe Eliezer isn't saying zevizeg goreim as one of those chumras of Avodah Zorah? And mind you, beautifully, many of the Rishonim understand that the concept itself of zevizeg goreim is based on bitol. You see? So that the hana that was usher is now butl in the other hana that's mutter. But if you're telling me if it falls into another thousand and they fall into it, that's all going to be usher. Well, obviously, so then zevizegorim would be usher because the two dinim would be interrelated, right? So there wouldn't be any bitl. But to take that and to apply it to a normal case where things can be butl, I mean, even orla could be butl. I mean, yes, not one at 60, one at 200. But I mean, the bottom line is that it's not the same at all. Okay, listen here. You know, I'm sort of fed up. Every time I bring you a Rebbe Eliezer, you say, well, how do you know that that's what he meant? How do you know it's not only in this case? Okay, bring me somebody else, smarty. You haven't identified anybody else. I keep bringing you Rebbe Eliezer. At least we find that Rebbe Eliezer partially holds of zevizeg goreim. So for God's sake, just accept it already, okay? Elaim Kena, Montarmi, go ahead. Offer me another choice. Who do you want the bride to be? Like Ploni Almoni? It's got to be Rebbe Eliezer. Not to mention the fact, I mean, now that you push me into the corner, I'm going to tell you a little secret. I know a brisa. And in that brisa it says, V'chein haya Rebbe Eliezer oser b'kol yisurim shebetorah. So now, all of your complaints are for naught. Omer Abayis. Abayis says, look, okay, we haven't really decided what Rebbe's opinion is, because you have to admit that in that first brisa, it sort of sounded like the machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim about the nature of the bread, is the bread going to be aser or mutter, is sort of just continuing the question of chadash yutatz, right? And that was Rebbe's opinion, the divrei Rebbe was going, I couldn't prove it to you. So now it turns out that you want to tell me it's Rebbe Eliezer. We may get some new data on this. And if those new data show up, then here's what we're going to have to do, says Abayag. If we find out that in Timtzamo Mazer, according to Rebbe, Zevizeg goreim is actually usher, and he was the author of that braita. So now we know that Rebbe and Rebbe Eliezer have equivalent shitas. Okay, then Rebbe Heine Rebbe Eliezer. Now, if it turns out that Rebbe in that first braita was not the one who was standing behind the Chadash Yutatz, and actually Rebbe himself holds Zevizeg goreim is mutter, and the only reason that the bread itself is usher is because, remember, a technical term, yesh shevach etzim bepat. So the only point is, no zevizeg goreim, direct causality, where there's only one factor, the energy of the iser that is now embedded in the structure of the bread. And there's no way for you to have this bread if you would remove that energy. Okay, so therefore, he's going to asu the bread, but only because it's direct. So let me point out something to you. Let's imagine that you did not fire up an oven. What you did was, is you fired up, let's say, clay cups or bowls or things like that, right? And now you've got a permanent pot. And in that case, I got to tell you that they for sure would have to be broken. Why? You'll say, wait a minute, what's the difference if it's an oven or if it's a pot? There's a big difference. An oven is always preheated. Nobody puts something into a cold oven and then turns it out. Just imagine you take now a bread and you stick it into a cold oven. However, when you're cooking a cholent, okay, what do? So first you put in the potatoes in the pot, and then you put in the beans, and then you put in the barley, and shall I tell you my entire recipe? Or, no, it's tafiomi. We'll do it some other time. So, but it's a good cholent. So what happens before you put the cholent pot on the fire? Huh? Are you enjoying that cholent pot? Darn right you are, because otherwise your potatoes would be all over your counter. So then that means that you're being nana directly from the cholent pot. You don't have a right to use the cholent pot directly. You can only use the cholent pot if it's usable only in the context of Zevus Agorin, you see. So over there, you're for sure going to have to get rid of the cholent pot. Masha'in came, the machlokas over here was because we're talking about an object that will always be used as a Zevus Agorin, ki plige betanur, or the type of a kedera that is also always heated. So lim andi amada, Zevus Agorin is asur. So then you can never use it, because even though you can only use it in conjunction with another source of energy, it's going to be asur because of Zevus Agorin. But according to Rebbe, if we're saying now Rebbe says that Zevus Agorin is mutter, not like Rebbe Eliezer, then you would be allowed to use it in the oven because it would only be used if it was preheated. The same, we're talking about a type of pot over here of a shcheres that is used only with preheating the pot. Now, remember that we never really satisfactorily explained why it is that you would be allowed to use this lichatchila by putting something else in it, right? In other words, I start off with the oven, and I know that I can't use this oven for baking. So now you're telling me, but since the result will be a Zevus Agorin, and the bread will be mutter for baking, use the oven. Why do I have a right to use the oven? I'm still putting the oven in the position that it is necessary and needed and used, actually, for making the bread. So I'm not allowed to do that, I thought, right? So there's a number of different approaches in the Rishonim about this issue, and the most famous of which is the Ran. The Ran says that the reason is very simple. Since the idea over here is that it's only usher to use lichatchila, any type of halacha that will effectively cancel any possibility of use under any circumstances is the equivalent of bidiyavad right then and there. In other words, if the only option is to destroy this, and it's really only usher lichatchila, so then why destroy it? Because then you're telling me bidiyavad, you see, very cute. So the very fact that something is only usher bidiyavad means that I would be allowed to allow it to function to create the situation which is completely mut. Okay, anyway, that's one approach, a very, very cute approach, I think, and most enjoy the Ran Svara the most. Okay, anyway, so that's where we get to in this. Now, there are those who argue, and they say that even if mutar, the oven may be mutar, but the kedera is usher because of the Svara that we said, that even though a kedera... So you thought the difference was only a cereal bowl or a glass, but the truth is even a cholent pot is used before you heat it up. That's the point. There are two different types of kederas. There's kederas that are used for cooking and kederas that are used for eating. And actually, the kedera used for cooking is the same as a cereal bowl because it gets the cholent in it before you utilize the heat and turn on the fire. Getting back now to this halacha, we find that Shmuel, interestingly, paskins that tanur shisiko b'klipei orla, if you did make that tanur, or you use kashin shekloi akerem, both of which are asurei hanah, the din is, it's got to be busted up. Chadash yutatz. Yashan Yutzan, and if you baked the bread in it, now he says, weird thing, that Rebbe says that the bread is mutter, and the Chachomim says the bread is usser. Said, what? That's the opposite. Exactly the opposite of what Rebbe said. Asked the Gemara, didn't we just have a brayta? It said that Rebbe is the one who ushers the bread, and the Chachomim remata the bread. Well, I guess Shmuel actually had a different version of that. Or, you know what, the truth is, I hate to say it, he may have had the same version and might be messing with our minds. Why would he do that? Well, because you see, normally the halacha is that we paskin like Rebbe Michaveiro, v'lo Michaveirav. So if you have a rabbim against Rebbe, you would paskin like Rebbe. I like the rabbi, not like Rebbe. But Shmuel held that in this case, the halacha is Rebbe. But he figured if I tell them the halacha is like Rebbe, even against the Chachamim, they'll never accept it. So what I'll do is I'll fool with their minds. I'll tell them over the brayso that it's the Chachamim who said that it's usher, and Rebbe who said that it's mut, and they'll say, you see, we shouldn't paskin like Rebbe, we'll paskin like the Chachamim. Whew. And that way, I get the same results anyway. So Bialma Kasavishmal Alocha Karebi Michave Ro Milo Michave Rav. And in this case he holds that specifically over here, Afilo Michave Rav, we pass like Rebbe that it's usher no matter what. So therefore Shmuel says to himself, you know what? I'll teach them the Braita backwards, and Atanaya Ipcha Kiechanakum Rabban and Lisur, that way the Rabbanan come out saying usher, and that way at least everyone won't be over on the halacha. Okay, so this is how Shmuel therefore paskins. Now if, however, the last thing that we said is that if you cook it directly over the coals, everybody's mutter that it's mutter. Now, I understand, if you cook it over the coals, isn't there still the permanent energy that's embedded in the bread? And why now all of a sudden is a mutter just because it was coals? So the reason, obviously, is going to be because of the question of where is the heat derived from. So we mentioned this earlier, right at the beginning of the sugya. There's actually a number of different stages. So what you can have is, you can have charcoal. Now the charcoal was originally wood. Let's say that it was originally atzei orla. When you turned it into charcoal, you basically no longer have the recognizable structure of the wood. And all that you have is anything else that was comprised of other ingredients has been burned away, and you basically are now left with a nice solid charcoal fire that gives you your barbecue and all the heat that you want and so on. But the question is it still considered to be wood, or is it not charcoal? Now let's imagine another case. Suppose you already lit the charcoal, and now all you have is glowing coals with a lot of heat. So the glowing coals do not show me a direct transformation of new heat all the time. They seem to be the remnant of what was there, in which case I could view it as not having anything of the original wood. But there's also a stage in between, and that's called the type of gecholim that are called lochashot, the whispering charcoal. See, there, you still, when you put your ear to it, you still hear it going flubba, 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 right? Because there's still little flames that pop up and they're licking it and licking it. There's always licking flames. Now, what are we talking about over here? So when you say that you do it over the coal, the point over there may well be that according to Rebbe, yes, yesh shevach etzim bepat, but not once it's been reduced to coals. So the truth is that there's really four different issues here, because look, it's possible that you could say, and in fact, we're going to see this is exactly what the Chachamim would say, that even when you have direct heat that is now radiating from a flame, an open flame, onto the bread, that is not wood. Because basically what happened is that you first turned that wood into a gas that is now combining with oxygen, and that is no longer wood. I don't care if you see it as a flame and you don't note the interim stages, that is not wood, and you are not being nene from wood. I don't care how close you are to the moment of combustion. Combustion is ipso facto not wood. So there you go. Wood doesn't burn. only wood that has been heated to a temperature in which it's no longer wood, but is now a gaseous expression of the wood, is mixing with the oxygen. That's not called wood. That would be the uppermost sheet of that wood, be makel totally, even if it's in the presence of the actual flame. Then you could say, once there's no flame that I see coming directly, and I'm getting heat out of flaming coals that are whispering still, that's not wood. For sure, if the coals are down to nothing, that's just glowing, and that's not wood. But Rebbe, which level did Rebbe say? No level, open fire level, whispering coals, or just glowing coals? So what I'm saying is, says the Gemara, that if it's over coals, any kind of coals, and you're not in the direct flame, then the bread is mutter. Now, Rav Yehuda disagrees with that, and he says, look, Shmuel said, Rav Barashi says, Rav Yochanan said, and we don't know exactly which one said which, but we do know that there might be a difference in this, and that is, one of them said that this is only where the gechalim are omamot. They're no longer flickering, they're only smoldering, so there's no whispering going on. Avo gechalim lo chashot, if they're actually flickering, so they're whispering, then Rebbe would say it's usher. Whereas the other one says, either Rebbe Yochanan or Shmuel, we're not sure, but one of them said, no, even if there's flickering, Rebbe only ushered it in the presence of the fire. Now, we couldn't figure that it's literally in the presence of the fire. We thought that even in the tanur, we've got coals. So, Bishlam l'man yom aloch ha-shot asurim mishum li-yeshav ha-chetzi b'pag, if you're going to tell me that Rebbe says you can't use the bread even where you utilize just whispering coals, because that is a permanent change in the structure of the bread, so then, okay, and then it explains why it is that pot is usher. But if you're going to tell me even if it's baked over whispering coals, flickering coals, that it's also mutter, so when is it ever usher? That you're telling me pot to usher because Yeshev HaChetzim, says Rav Papa. Yes, indeed. The only time that Rebbe said that it's usher is where you have the actual open flame in the oven, nothing between the flame and the bread. It's not that there's a secondary source of heat, and that, Rebbe said, is considered to be Shevach Eitzim. But in a chinami, any form that is already carbonized and visibly carbonized, Rebbe would agree, that's not considered to be wood. So wait a minute. So then you're saying that the Rabbanan, who said that it's mutter, they're saying it's mutter even if it's right in front of the fire. So then when the heck is it usher? I don't understand. If you're telling me that there's such a thing as iser hanah in wood, but it's never wood, no matter what I do with it to bake anything, so what's the problem? It'll never be usher, right? So, etzim d'isur l'rabbanan eichem hashkachas la. Hey, buddy, did you ever hear of carpentry? Take the wood and make yourself a little chair, okay? Put down your aching back. Is that a pleasure or is it not? That's iser hanah. What do you want any more than that? So that would be a case of a sharshifa. You made yourself a stool. That's enough of hana'a, and that would be the one that would be us. Boimine Rami Barchoma, mi Rav Chista. Tanur, she'isiko ba'atse hegdash. Now, okay, what about if, in this case, I didn't use chas v'shalom avodazara, but I actually used wood that was kodesh. I baked bread in the oven. Would the Rabbanan say the same thing that they said about Orla, Kilayim, the Chometz? Would they say the same thing over here about Hegdesh? Or might Hegdesh be different? In other words, the Rabbanan are saying, look, there's no Shevach Eitzim B'Pat, and we don't care about it. So would they go so far as to say that that would be true here too? Now, the truth is, gentlemen, there's something going on between the lines. What's going on between the lines is the question of whether carbonizing Hegdash makes any difference. Because it's going to turn out that Hegdash remains usser, we learned that from a pusik, even after it's burned. So if that's the case, then obviously the whole argument about the coals falls to pieces, because I don't care whether it's carbon or whether it's wood, the bottom line is it's still going to remain usser because of the Kedusha in it. So, okay, but right now we don't know that, right? So, I mean, it sounds like the same issue. And the only question is, do you want to be machmir because you're talking about inyanim of Hegdash or not? So Rav Chista says, look, Rami Bar Chama, here's your answer. Hapat asura. If you use Hekdesh, it's Osir. So Rami Bar Chama says, what's the difference? Explain to me what the difference is between this case and the case of Orla. Says Rava, what do you mean? You don't know that there's a difference between Hekdesh and Orla. Now, Rav is not right. There's a whole bigger difference. But there's certainly one difference. Okay, Ashta, it's not the same. Orla, if you put it into 1 and 200, it's going to be bottle. Hekdesh afilu be'elaflo bottle. And the Hekdesh is never bottle. So therefore, the smallest amount of Hana is also going to be Asr. So because of that, they Asr the pot. Mashen came over there. Since be'ikr, the Hana is coming from the burning, and not from the actual wood. So over there it was mutter. That's the difference. But I'll tell you what I don't understand, says Rava. That shouldn't bother you, my dear Rami. But what should bother you is the real problem. How in the heck could anybody asser something by taking Hekdesh and burning it if the din is, as everybody knows, once you were over on Me'ilah, it's not Hekdesh anymore. So at the moment that you took the wood from Hekdesh and put it in the oven, you just took it out of Hekdesh. There's no more Me'ilah because you were Mechalal the Hekdesh by using it. Every time that you're over on Me'ilah, then it's no longer Hekdesh. So can you tell me by the time you burnt it, how is it Hekdesh anymore? That's the problem. Halo Ma'al HaMesik wasn't the guy who lit the oven already Ma'al and therefore took it out of its status of Kedusha. V'kolaych namol HaMesik nafkolo l'chulin. The din is that whenever somebody's over on Me'ilah, then the object that he was Ma'al now becomes chulin. So then that means that the bread was being baked with chulin and not with Hekdesh. So I don't understand the case. The case doesn't make any sense. Omer of Papa, no, the case can make sense. I'll tell you how. You see, in order for that to work, you think it's because it's the pigia in the Hekdesh that turns it into chulin. No, that's not true. It's the din of Me'ilah that turns it into chulin. In other words, the fact that the Torah said that for doing this action, you're going to have to bring a korban Me'ilah and pay back the extra chomesh and so on and so forth. So that shows you that the Torah considers the Hekdesh to have been hurt and taken away. But what about in a place where Me'ilah would not apply? So where Me'ilah doesn't apply, you can't change Hekdesh just because you're kicking it and shouting at it. That's basically what you're doing. So you've insulted the Hekdesh. Big deal. No problem. He's Meichel al Alboinai. And it's not going to be Yotzi L'chulon just for you. So therefore, all we need to do is figure out a case where there's not going to be an Isser of Me'ilah. Now, the truth is, this is a very simple case where there's not going to be an Isser of a din of Me'ilah, and that is where you do it on purpose. If you do it on purpose, there's no Chiyuv of Me'ilah. So since there's no, the whole din of Me'ilah is only open to somebody who accidentally utilized Hekdesh. But if you did it on purpose, so then in this case, you would not have been Motzi et L'chulin. But we don't want to say that that's the case because, I mean, to read into the word somebody was Mesik, I mean, why should we say that it means Bemezit? So we don't like that term. So we're trying to find an alternative. So Rav Papa says, look, I can easily find an alternative. For instance, let me ask you something. You've got yourself a Korban Shlomim. Right? You misuse the meat of a carbon shlomim. Are you going to be over on Me'ilah? No. Why not? Well, because shlomim is not called kache Hashem. And in Me'ilah, it says only kache Hashem. Kache Hashem means miuchadim l'Hashem. So it would have to be kache kache. Well, shlomim is not kache kache. Okay, so now let's imagine a case like this. You take wood and you're bringing it for the purposes of sale to buy a carbon shlomim. So you say, okay, I'm making this wood Hekdesh for purposes of my Korban Shlomim. You spend the day gathering wood. There you are, Hillel, working your head off just to be able to bring the money for your Korban Shlomim. Now, what's the din of that wood? That wood has the Kedusha level of the Shlomim, right? Because that's what it was Minyuchat for. So you said, this is L'dmei Shlomim. That's basically what you said. So therefore, if you have eight sim that are essentially eight sim of the Kedusha of Shlomim, and you're going out Liba to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda is the one who made it very clear that it's only the actuality of the Chiyuv of Me'ilah that takes Hekdesh out of Hekdesh and turns it into Chulin. But the fact that you did something that Hekdesh does not, and that's out Liba to Rabbi Yehuda who says, look, Hekdesh that you were moil in Bishogeg becomes chulin. But if you did it on purpose, it doesn't become chulin. Why not? Why not? Well, obviously, why not? Memezid my time alone. Because he attributes the din of Me'ilah as being one and the same of the taking it on into Cholin, right? So since there's no Lav Bar Me'ilu, there's no way to be Me'il on Atzei Shlomim, so then the case of Bemezid, the Bemezid Rebuta's logic is you weren't Me'il, and therefore Lo Nafik L'Cholin, the case of the Shlomim is the equivalent case, because since Shlomim can never get Me'ila on it, so it's as if you did it on purpose. And Lo Nafik L'Cholin, that's how I answer your problem, okay? So we're talking about wood that is not actually going to become chulin. And by the way, I don't even like your question. This big deal, the question that you're asking is that, well, the guy was Mayel, and therefore it should be Yotzil chulin. That's not even true. You're telling me that if he would have been over on Me'ila, then by definition, it would have been chulin? Is that true? Vahatanya, remember that the Braita says, Kol hanisrafim efran mutar. Anything that the Torah says, you are mechuyev to burn this thing up. There's a whole list in Tmura of all of those things. And once you did it, then it's considered to be naset mitzvato. When you burnt it up, and now there's nothing of the Isser that is anywhere there. You did what the Torah said to do. Now you can benefit from the ashes. But this does not apply to Atzei Asherah, as we saw before, because it says Me'uma Menacherim, which tells me that even whatever is left, even the ashes, are Usser. And there's another thing, which is always Usser, and that is the Efer of Hegdash. Why don't we put the two together and say Efer Hegdash and Efer of the Asherah is always Usser? Because it's not true. Because if a goy, as I told you before, if a goy would have taken a piece of an Asherah tree and used it in his fireplace, then the Efer would not have been Usser, because nobody goes around burning God for heat. So because of that, it must be that he's now canceled the God status because he's too cold. Anyway, so that we can't say the word la'olam. We say this over here, the Hegdash is always going to be Usser, means even if you were Me'ila, did Me'ila on it by heating it in your oven, and you, Rava claimed that, well, the moment that you burned it, then it should no longer be able to be chulin because it now became Me'ilad and therefore chulin. So how do you explain this? So why the ashes Usser, Rava? Amar Rami Bar Chama. Well, hold on a second. Who's to say that anybody burned it? Maybe nobody burned it. There's no shogeg and there's no mazin. What do you mean nobody burned it? How did it burn? Did you ever have an electrical fire? So he was storing the wood in the garage, right? And there was an electrical fire in the garage and it burnt up the wood, okay? Now, who exactly are you going to blame for Me'ila? So, Kagon Shanafud like a Me'ila, Batse Hagdash. It just started a fire. Where over there, there's nobody that is, there's no human involved. Leka Inish Denimo, there's nobody there who did Me'ilas. There's nothing to do. Shogig Mezid, nothing, okay? Rav Shmaya says, you don't have to deal with that. We might be talking about over here the kind of wood that we're saying is never going to lose its Kedusha. We're talking about the kind of wood that requires Gneza. What's that? We just had it yesterday. Trumas Hadeshan. So the Trumas Hadeshan, you've got ashes. What are you supposed to do with those ashes? V'samo etzalam is beach. You have to put it down. And it's usser even after you did that. Titania, v'samo means put it down gently. V'nachas, don't throw it there that some of it should scatter. V'samo means kulo. It's all got to be there, every last bit of it. And v'samo means don't allow it to scatter from because it's going to be usser. And therefore, the Torah is telling me that is a permanent isser. So maybe that's what it's talking about. There certainly are such Atzei Hegdash. And now we get to the next exciting part of the Mishnah. We have completed our dinim of how it is that Isurei Hana now will affect other things. There's one very important part that's still going to come up, but this is not only Isurei Hana, and that is Hagalat Kelim. We talked about the molecules being formed by the energy of Isurei Hana, but how about if the interstices of the molecules are holding the actual substance, which is usser, and which will come out if you apply heat into the liquid that's in the pot? That's going to be a sugya that we need still to get to. But currently, we completed our discussion of the Isurei Hana element and how it could be transferred into a different state of energy, so to speak, which is permanent, which, of course, is actually what it is. It's a nice way of storing energy. There's only one problem. never figured out how to get the energy back out. So don't try to use a tanur of cheres as a battery for your automobile. You won't get very far. Okay. But it definitely, you know, it's definitely a way in which that energy is right there stored in your tanur. So Rabbi Yehuda, the next thing that we had in the Mishnah, which related to the question of what to do with the tanur, because that was the only reason that we had the Hava Amina, you could actually heat the tanur while you're burning it, was because we're going to leave it to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein bir chametz ela sreifa. So that's what it means. And look, I mean, it makes so much sense. It's a kal v'chomer that it's got to be that way, because is there an iser of bal yera'eh and bal yematze anotar? Torah says you're not allowed to leave it over. Did the Torah say, and don't even look at it, and make sure it's nowhere that could be hidden in your house? No, it just says don't leave it over. And over there, nonetheless, it says you better burn up all of that noser. So when it comes to chametz, oh, it's a lot worse than noser. Don't even look at it. So then that means that if I have to burn up the noser, for sure I'm going to have to burn up the chametz, right? So chametz, sheyeshno b'bal yera'el, b'al yematze, lo kol shekein sheton sreifa. So it's obvious. Anybody who looks at the dinner noser immediately says, oh my gosh, I for sure got to do that to my chametz. Said the chachamim to Rabbi Yehuda, look, there's rules about kal v'chomers, my friend. Yes, it certainly strikes you on a balabatisha level that, yes, it makes a lot of sense. And I understand that your pastor would undoubtedly say that this is a real kal v'chomer. But there's one serious problem with kal v'chomering this. And that is the rule that since kal v'chomer means exactly what it says, that you're trying to derive something that is going to be more chomer for you based on something which has that rule, even though it's less chomer, then the rule is like this. Any kal v'chomer that starts with a chumrah and ends up creating a kula is not a kal v'chomer. So what you are doing, you're saying you got to burn it. Yeah, that's not what you said. You said the only way to get rid of your chametz is by burning it. Oh my God. So what happens if somebody's sitting there on Erev Pesach and he's got a pile of chametz and he's, oh my gosh, it's almost out. Let's throw it into the toilet. No, don't you dare throw that chametz into the toilet. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do anything to chametz except burn it. But I don't have any wood. Tough. So what's going to happen? So it turns out that this guy's going to end up keeping his chametz. Is that what you're suggesting? That's not much of a kal v'chomer, isn't it? So kol din shata dan techilato lachmir v'sofo lakel is not a din. Din over here, remember, means by definition kal v'chomer, right? Ein mazir min adin and so on and so forth. Okay. Because what's going to happen if lo matza etzim l'sofo? He doesn't have any wood. So then he's not going to do anything. He should sit yeshev batel. The Torah says tashbitu so'or mi batechem. Obviously, the meaning of that tashbitu is get rid of that stuff no matter what. So, and you're telling him, no, it doesn't mean get rid of that stuff no matter what. It means burn it. You can't say that. You're now misconstruing the meaning of the Torah's mitzvah of tashbitu. That's not a use of a kal v'chomer. I'm sorry. Okay, says Rabbi Yehuda. Let me try from a different angle. You guys don't like kal v'chomers. By the way, Rabbi Yehuda actually is dorish kal v'chomers like this elsewhere. But you don't like these kind of kal v'chomers. I'll give you something else, okay? Here's the other way to look at it. Forget about a kal v'chomer. Let us learn it this time out of a simple comparison, okay? Noser is usher to eat. Yep. Chometz is usher to eat. Yep. Okay. If you got to burn a noser because it's usher to eat, you got to burn chometz. No, come on, man. Let's take an avela. Is an avela usher to eat? Yep. Do you got to burn it? Nope. You're supposed to actually lenochrid the kareno or give it to the ger, whatever. Okay? So you see, it's a surbachila, ain't a tuna sreifa. Not much of an argument. Ah, I knew you would say that. But noser is asur bachila and hana, and chametz is asur bachila and hana. So if noser has to be burned, chametz has to be burned. Really? And how about a shor haniskal? Is a shor haniskal asur b'hana? Yeah. Did anybody ever go around burning up shor haniskals? No, you're not supposed to burn them. You're supposed to stone them. So over there, it's asur bachila b'hana. You don't burn it. Ah, I knew you would say that. So now let's get into some details, buddy. Hefresh, boom. I say, nope, it's different. What's the difference? Notar's asur b'achila and hana with one additional element. It's also a chiyuv of chorus. Now, chometz is asur b'achila and b'hana, and it's also the chorus. Aha, we're getting closer, aren't we, boys? So, ma noser b'sreifa, Af chometz b'sreifa. Say the chachamim, nope, still no good. Because the shor haniskal has one part in it that is bekoris, and that's the chalev. So according to you, the chalev of the shor haniskal, which is asur b'ano, and is a chi of koris, should be burnt, and it isn't. Okay? Ain't ta'un sreifa. So therefore, no good. Yes, is Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, fine. I'll try something else. The Chazer of Yehuda, he says, all right, I've got another mocker. And that is basically the equivalent of a Gezeira Shava. Because look, does it say lo totiru mimenu? Yeah, you're not allowed to leave it around. Is the idea of bal yera'eh bal yematzeh? I mean, certainly lo totiru, you can't leave it around, right? It's another way of saying don't leave it around. So then that means that notar has it in bal totiru. And chometz has a din of bal totiru, and just like the bal totiru of the notar implies, as it says beferish in the pasuk, that you're going to have to burn it. So then the lo totiru, which is actually bal yira'eh, bal yimatzeh, of chometz is also b'sreifa. So they said to him, well, now that is a very powerful argument. There's only one person in the world that said something that would make that argument useless. Guess what his name is? Yehuda. You! You are the one who mess up that argument. You know why? Because you say that the din is that an osham toloi and a chata sa'of that is being brought by a woman who's not sure whether she had a child that was mechay of the chatas or not. So over there, you're not allowed. The chata sa'of can be brought on the suffix, but it has a din of an avela mitzad suffix. It can't be eaten because maybe it wasn't kedush in the first place and so on. And you said that the din is over there that you do not have to burn it, okay? So lidvarech, according to your own words, you can now prove that your argument is wrong. Because those things are babal totirot, beferish the issur of leaving them around, and we say that, yes, you have to burn them, but you say you don't need to burn them. It would be okay to flush them down the toilet. You could be cover them, you said, right? That did it. Poor Rabbi Yehuda was shattered. Shasak Rabbi Yehuda. Ha, 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 said Rabbi Yosef. That's exactly what the old saying says. Hainu da ampre inche. The kappa, the chata nagra. Why, the very horseradish dish that was hollowed out into a bowl by this fancy carpenter, that's where he burnt his tongue with the horseradish. Begavan is rof chardala, actually mustard. But it would be the very thing that burnt his own tongue. Om Rabbi, no, there's a better saying that to apply over here. He didn't just burn his tongue. He actually was completely crushed. I would say that the correct saying for this is the sadana besadne yatev mitvil yade mishtalim. When it's the guy who builds the handcuffs and he's the handcuff manufacturer and then he's led away in his own handcuffs, now that's what we call a real proper repayment. Rava says it's worse than that. Rabbi Yehuda cannot recover from this one. He's finito. The real one to say is, the arrow maker who is shot by his own arrow has been properly repaid forever. Okay. So now that we have finished off Rabbi Yehuda's poor opinion, my gosh, there seems to be all too much joy about this particular argument. But in any event, the Chachomim did not accept Rabbi Yehuda's approach over here. And so we'll have to take a look at the alternatives, which is crumbling it up, throwing it into the toilet, and so on, and see exactly what was meant in what detail. Okay, Rabosai, so we had another wonderful, fun daf in Pesachim, getting closer to a fuller understanding of the nature of Yisurei Hanah, the implications of Yisurei Hanah, and the chiyuvim of what needs to be done with Yisurei Hanah, and what is done with Yisurei Hanah, which includes the Efer when it comes to Hegdash, or when it comes to Asherah, and many of the other wonderful issues of Zevezeh Goreim, Yeshevach Etzim Bepat, four different levels of Yeshevach Etzim Bepat,